Welcome to SaaS Open Mic by Chartmogul. I'm Ed Shelley. Mikita Mikado started out on his entrepreneurial career selling berries he'd picked in his home country of Belarus. Now he runs PandaDoc, a Series A-funded SaaS business in San Francisco. Clearly, there's a lot that happened between those two points of Mikita's life, so I joined him to try and understand some of the things he's learned along the way. In our discussion, we cover how activities from his youth translate to the business today, how his long-term business relationship with co-founder Sergey works successfully, and how the two complement each other. Also, why he's so passionate about making business transactions and contracts less painful with PandaDoc, and what metrics are important to the team there, and how they're actionable. Finally, we discuss the books he's learned the most from over the years, and you can find a list of these recommended books on our blog post at blog.chartmogul.com. There's plenty more here, but I'll leave it to you to have a listen. Don't forget, you can subscribe to SaaS Open Mic on iTunes or SoundCloud, and stay up to date with the latest Chartmogul resources and articles at blog.chartmogul.com. And now, here's my discussion with Mikita Mikado, founder and CEO of PandaDoc. Okay, so Mikita, thanks for joining me. It's great to be chatting to you. How are things going there?
Things are pretty good. We had a fabulous sunrise this morning here in San Francisco.
Oh yeah, so our team was out there last week for the SASTO conference, and they said it basically rained every single day when they were there.
Bad luck, man. California had drought for 5 years, yeah. But now it's raining like crazy.
So I guess you guys are kind of thankful for that then.
Yeah, I don't think people complain too much.
You're obviously the co-founder of PandaDoc. And I wanted to, I think there's a couple of things that just looking a little bit at your backstory would be really interesting to talk about. First one is that you grew up in Minsk, is that right?
Yeah. I was born there right around the time when things went kind of down.
Okay.
In the Eastern Bloc.
It would be great if you could just talk a little bit around what was happening at that time and how you made the decision to leave there and like the lead up to you obviously eventually co-founding PandaDoc. I know there's some other, at least one other business between those two points, I think, if I'm right. But if you could just give me a quick overview of like how you got to where you are now, that would be awesome.
Sure. I was a happy child, like regardless of a bad economy and the fact that we had to stay in lines and all that. My parents did a great job. So I don't really remember much of like the bad stuff from the early days, and the Soviet Union, whatnot. Even though we lived in the city, we had to do some like farming just to make sure that they're vegetables but it was fine. Like everybody did it, you know, it was okay. So I grew up in Belarus in Minsk, and I always had this kind of like entrepreneurial itch. I always wanted to do something, to come up with some kind of a businesses and ideas. When I was a kid, I picked up berries on my grandparents' farm outside the city. Not really a farm, just a summer house. And I sold them on a farmer's market. And that went out okay. And then, you know, I did the same on the neighbors, like farmlands, because like they didn't want to go to the city. They didn't want to sell it. And they just outsourced it to me. And I don't know if people bought from me because of like, you know, I think it was like half charity, half.
Okay, what age are we talking here, by the way?
I don't know. How old like are you at this 10 point? Years old.
Okay.
Like, so, you know, so pretty I was young. A kid. That's why I was half charity. Yeah. and then I've chosen to learn programming. That was in the high school because it was cool and interesting, and I loved math and blah blah blah. I went to the computer science university back in Belarus because at the time, probably maybe like one of two things you can do to make a decent living. And I got in, had a bunch of like gigs and small businesses I was trying to run, but then got this opportunity to jump on the plane and fly to US, and that's what I did. And when I landed, I did a bunch of random jobs, but one thing that I started to do and that worked out was that I built a bunch of websites and set up a web design agency, and that paid for college, and I stayed in America a little longer. And then that web design agency turned to become more of a software company instead of like building websites for people providing services. We switched to building extensions to web content management systems and selling them online. And that was my like first real business with real employees, and we grew to about 40 people. And that was the first business I did with my current co-founder, and which makes our journey last for like, yeah, it's like 9 years we've been working together.
Okay. Wow. There's a bunch of things there. So like, was this path clear, like pretty clear to you from back in those days when you were selling berries, or was it just something that you kept doing and one thing turned into the next thing? Like, did you have a vision of starting a company one day?
I always wanted to start a company. I just love building and coming up with kind of like taking an idea and making that idea something tangible is a lot of fun. I just really like it. And I loved it when I was a kid and then growing up, and I still love it. Like, this is one of the most entertaining things for me. Let's put it that way.
No, that makes sense, definitely. And then you mentioned, like, with your current co-founder, that this is like a partnership that's been going on for some years. Again, was that something that you kind of saw happening, or is that just the way that things turned out?
So we met back in the computer science university. And we played at the same band. He was drums, and I was bass. And he was the smartest person I've known, not just in my universe, like the smartest person I've known, period.
Right.
And not just that, but he also got really far with his career. Unlike me, he didn't like went on a path of trying to do a bunch of gigs and failing 9 out of 10. Like,
yeah,
he built a proper career, and he's got like he got really far. Comparing to, again, like all of the friends I had at the time, he got really, really far, and like way ahead of other developers that I was friends with. And I just wanted to partner with Sergey. His name is Sergey, and I don't know if I planned it. Probably. It took like 4 months to convince him or something.
What's the dynamic between you guys? Like, there's obviously something that works there. If you like starting multiple companies. Is there like a very obvious like fit in terms of what you both contribute to that?
Oh, absolutely. We balance each other really well, and we have very different skill set, very different personality. I would say it's like a puzzle, right? We're very differently shaped pieces, but come together nicely. I hope.
Oh, that's cool. How do you manage, like, just on the relationship between you guys, how do you manage kind of conflict? Clearly, if you've been doing things together for a number of years, you found a way to kind of get over humps and solve problems effectively. I'm just wondering if there's something about that you think is like a good strategy for managing conflict.
I think managing conflicts is an art and a science. That it is an art, it is a science, it is a skill. You have to do it. At the point your organization grows beyond yourself, you have to learn this. And it's an art of making compromises, of persuading the other party, learning to sometimes take a step back, make two steps forward, like negotiating and so on and so forth. At the end of the day, like, I think we both want the best for the business.
Yeah.
We might differ in the ways we want to get there, but it's all about like finding a common ground. So practically, there are a few things that I personally like to do whenever there is a disagreement. Mm-hmm. And those are, seek for external validation. And what that means is, advisors or other founders or content. There's so much content on the internet right now that you can find. So basically, look for a third party that has a perspective on an issue that you can't find a common ground on.
Okay.
Data validation, right? Find some kind of data that would support your point of view. C, just persuade, try to turn your opponent in whatever argument to believe that there's an alternative point of view. So like all those things are, it's work. It's very hard.
Yeah.
That's actually the hardest parts of running a business.
Sure. But I think that's great advice. And probably a lot of people out there don't take a structured approach to that stuff. It's because it's so often it becomes an emotional thing. And then once you're kind of in that realm, you're set up to fail, I think.
Hey, including myself, like I'm not saying I'm good at it. It's like, it is hard, very hard.
Yeah. Cool. Let's move on to PandaDoc. I would love to talk about what you guys are doing there. Now over the last, how long has it been? 3 years or something?
PandaDoc was on the market for 2 years, 4 months. It's been 3 years and maybe like a couple of months since we outlined the vision for the product and just kind of like written the first line of code.
Mm. Okay. So what is PandaDoc?
PandaDoc helps businesses to accelerate the way they transact with electronic quotes, proposals, contracts, invoices, and so on and so forth. That's our product. We help you to get from an offer, close deal, and the money in the bank much faster.
So it's really a lot to do with, or it ends up being the transactional part of like document handling and things like that.
Yeah. Because if you think about what facilitates transactions, what moves transactions, most of the transactions with a decent check size are going to be moved by documents. If you got like a few thousands of dollars involved in a deal, then there's going to be a contract. And what we do is we automate transactions, we accelerate the way they're done. But the way we do it is by automating the documents that back them and completely changing the way this documentation is being generated, sent out, collaborated on, signed on, and processed in general. So that's our product. You can call it document automation, you can call it quote to cash. Some people, put electronic signing products into this category. do have electronic signing, but what we really do is we automate the entire workflow associated with transactions.
Okay. And how did you get to solving that problem? Like, a lot of people that I've spoken to before would tell me that they're like experiencing this problem in the workplace, and it's like really an itch that they need to scratch, and they eventually go on to build a solution to tackle it. Is that the same for you, or like how did you come around to solving this particular problem with PandaDoc?
Yeah, it was the same with a little twist.
Okay.
We started with the automation of sales proposals and built the product around sales proposals automation.
So it's just like a small slice of that final solution.
Yeah. And then we learned that this is just a piece of the puzzle. And the customers we're serving use our product for contract management and for invoicing. And it's the same exact workflow. A transaction is it's a solid process, right? But the reason why we built this product for proposals management is because we hated the process hated the process that involves closing a deal, making an offer, copying and pasting from Word to Excel, from old quotes proposals that you had, then attaching that document to email, then a customer asks for a discount, you go back and forth over email. You get a long email thread, and then you reattach, and then their lawyers get involved, and they want a red line. And that email thread becomes immersed, and then you finally got a reason invoice. So you go to your finance people. They take their sweet time. They send that invoice finally. Then you got to chase that invoice because their finance people take even sweeter time. And it becomes like a 2 months process for which really needs to be like 1 week of an interaction. It's not that complicated, you know?
Yeah.
Close the deal, get paid. It's not that complicated. And, on the buyer side, it shouldn't be that complicated. It should be a lot easier and a lot more delightful. If you want a product or a service, get it fast. Get it like within a week. Don't wait for 2 months while, finance people and lawyers are going over email, losing latest versions of that proposal or contract. And it just makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
So
yep.
That's why we decided to do what we do now.
Cool. I'm looking on your pricing page because I love to look at people's pricing pages. I have a small obsession with it. And I think it's one of the best places to go to like understand really like what the business is, and you have a great kind of statement at the top of that, which is close 30% more deals in half the time. That's like really compelling. That obviously like this is a SaaS solution, you have subscription pricing. Was this something that just kind of made sense for this product? Did you know it was going to be a SaaS business from the beginning?
Yeah, we knew that this is going to be a SaaS business from the beginning. Our previous business was not a SaaS company, and we sold extensions, software. We really disliked that distribution model, and we really we dig the ability to just sign online into products like, at the time, we were big fans of 37 Signals, Basecamp, Hi-Rise, and be able to swipe your card and just start using whatever you want to use and try it out and so on and so forth. So we knew this is going to be a SaaS product.
Okay.
On the value proposition, like, just let me know how many salespeople you have, and we'll help you guys out. ChartMogul will grow by 30%.
That's great. A lot of people don't think about kind of reinforcing the value proposition on the pricing page of their site. Like they focus on the landing page, and then the pricing is becomes very dry. But this is super cool. How did you come to like build this pricing model? It's always like a really hard topic for SaaS companies to settle on some form of pricing structure. Is there anything that you came across there that would be useful for people to understand?
You know, Ed, I would love to talk about how like scientific this was and how much thought we put behind it. But the truth is, it was just a trial and error and a little bit of learning from other businesses in the industry.
Okay.
By looking at their pricing pages.
Yeah. But you know what? Like this is... I'm slowly discovering this the more people that I speak to. This is what everybody does. Nobody knows how to price their product. And it almost always ends up being an exercise in either trial and error or looking at competitors or in some cases, obviously, talking to customers or potential customers. But there is no – it's becoming more and more clear to me that there is no formula for how do you price a SaaS product from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning, that's the trick. Right now, we have a plan on how we're going to experiment with it. So, by the way, like if any prospective customers are listening to this podcast, you guys get to sign up and buy PandaDuck now because we're going to change our pricing very soon.
all right,
but with all the seriousness, we do have we do plan a revamp our pricing model. A few folks within PandaDuck are working on it and crunching data to figure out what makes more sense.
Okay. And what's the approach with that? Do you look at the pricing you have today and look at the customers, the spread that you have across each plan and then kind of remodel it for a different price? Or how do you do that?
Yeah, so a few things come into the account. One is churn. We want to make sure that, and you know, the reasons for the churn. We want to make sure that we service, the customers that we service feel like the price they pay is fair, and we provide significant amount of value for every dollar that goes towards PandaDuck. So churn, like analysis of churn, is important. We do that. Then we look at the data, and we compare. We just analyze. Okay, if we move this plan like in that, you know, in that direction, how much money are we going to lose or gain, and so on and so forth. So we got to make sure we don't break our bank. And then we look at things like usage, at things like average number of users on account. By now, we've talked to thousands of people that use or used our product. So all those things kind of like come into the mix. And then the other part is art. You know, like you get a lot of data inputs, and then you think those through and you make a decision.
Okay. So you touched on a lot of metrics there. At ChartMogul, we're pretty obsessed with metrics. They're like the things that drive our everyday product and our content. So I would love to know what metrics are most important to you guys at PandaDuck, and what do you use on a daily basis to make your decisions? So you mentioned churn as like a key driver for looking at the pricing model. Are there other metrics that are really important for you guys?
Yeah, average revenue per account.
Okay.
Lifetime value, average purchase price, average deal size. That's also average deal size. We have self-service customers and we have sales assisted customers. So the average deal size and the sales floor is important because we have to make sure that economics work in that area.
And what kind of decisions are you making with these? Like, is it purely from like a reporting perspective, or are there things that you look at each day and that drive the decisions you make?
I think churn is the biggest one. That defines a lot of things. Like that defines the focus areas. For my co-founder, that's a very important metric to think about the product decisions that they make. Now, what's also important is churn in different cohorts of customers.
Sure.
You can't build everything for everyone, but you have to have that sweet spot you optimize for. And then the reasons for churn within those cohorts, that's really important.
And do you capture those reasons in the product?
We do. And on top of that, we interview customers that exited to understand what was going on, what didn't work, and so on and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, other metrics, average revenue per account, average revenue per sales assisted accounts, average purchase price, because again, that, we have to make sure that on a certain tier of customers, assigning a sales rep to help go through the funnel is economically viable. I mean, there are a lot of things to look at.
Is there one metric there that you use as a kind of compass metric or North Star, some people call it? So the one thing that you know, or that you kind of strive every day to increase. It's usually quite specific to the product, right? So it could be like the number of documents that they process or something like that.
Yeah, well, monthly recurring revenue is the ultimate metric that, that tells me how we do.
Sure.
The number of documents sent through our product is an important one, but you got to understand that the value of each document varies.
Okay.
Sometimes, we get $1 million deals done through PandaDoc with three documents. So the value of those documents is really high, while the velocity is low. At the same time, we also have folks using PandaDoc for, let's say, HR purposes, and they send 100 documents per day to update employees on some kind of policies that happen within the company. So, it varies. So for us, it's an important metric to look at, I'd say kind of on a month-to-month basis.
Sure.
I wouldn't say I'm checking it every day.
Okay. Just a couple more things that I wanted to ask you. The first one is whether there's anything that's really surprised you through building PandaDoc. You've obviously started a couple of businesses before. What are the things this time around that have your kind of biggest learnings, or the things that maybe you didn't expect? And that could be around building a team, anything around kind of actually building a business or a company.
Dude, there's a lot. I was clueless when I started this business. So
okay.
I am still clueless. And
so how do you...
Every day gives an opportunity to learn a ton. So let's say a few things. One, I underestimate the importance of being a very good psychologist. Let's put it that way. You need to at the point your company grows beyond even probably 10, 20 people. It's important to, it is critical to know how to work with people well. That's very important. Mm. And hiring the right people, that's crucial.
And how do you build that skill if you don't think you have it? And I think a lot of people that are founders, they're not classically great at that. How do you get better at it?
Mm. Well, just the way you get better at anything,
just make the mistakes.
Make the mistakes and learn from them. That's one. Mm. It's a very powerful one, but very expensive one. Mm-hmm. There is also a cheap one, but works really well. Books. That one is pretty good.
Do you have any specific books that you recommend?
Oh, a ton.
People love book recommendations. It's the best thing for podcasts.
All right. I recently read Quiet Leadership that talks about a mix of management practices and neuroscience, which is pretty cool, very interesting. I would I bet a lot of founders that are going to be listening to the podcast are early stage founders.
Sure.
So something like Pitch Anything is another really cool one. It's not about internal, internal management, but rather external.
Right.
Things like fundraising and sales in general.
Right.
Carnegie's book is a foundation.
Yeah.
I would just stop here, but and I don't know if I have the book list on my on my blog. It's mikita.co.
Okay.
If I don't, then I'll put it there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put all of these in the blog that accompanies this, because I think, I don't know, I'm also a little bit addicted to book recommendations. I've started reading a lot more in the last year or two, and I'm always looking for more. So maybe it's just a selfish thing for me, but that sounds like there's some good ones there. So thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably a good place to leave it, Makita. I think this is really valuable stuff, and we've covered like a wide range of things, from like PandaDoc itself to you and your background. Is there anything that you'd like to say quickly before we go? Are you guys hiring? And if so, like, feel free to plug that quickly.
Absolutely. We are hiring in one of our locations, Minsk, Belarus, or San Francisco, California, or Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We're looking for talented people. The company is growing really fast. Openings change all the time. So check us out. If what we do is close to what you want to do, the problem we're solving is something you care about, we'd love to have a conversation. Reach out, careers@pandadoc.com. And I just want to wish the best luck to everyone who is on this journey of building a business. It's very hard, but it's very rewarding, and it's a lot of fun. So good luck, everybody. And Ed, thanks a lot for having me here.
Thank you. No, thanks. It's been super cool to chat. And like I said, I think a lot of people are going to find what you say very valuable. So once again, I'll put all of the references and everything in the blog post for this. And you can find it there on blog.chartmogul.com. So Makita, thank you so much.
Sounds good, Ed. Thank you very much.
Have a great day. See you.
Bye-bye.